Be the right club. Be the right club today. Yes!
Johnny, that's better than most.
How about him?
That is better than most. Better than most!
Expect anything different?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the No Laying Up podcast. We're missing Porath. We almost got the full Ryder Cup recap group back together. Calling in from St. Louis, we have from ESPN, Kevin Van Valkenburg, and from CBS, Kyle Porter. You guys are in the same hotel room. I usually hate doing three-man weave remote podcasts, but how I need you guys to try to explain what you saw today. You guys were on the grounds. We were watching at home on TV. I can't even imagine the unspeakable things you witnessed today.
I think you just stole my line.
I didn't mean to.
It's okay. It's Porter's original line anyway. I was going to just rip it off from him. So,
what was the origin of that line?
It was the Spieth thing. When we came, Porter and I went out and watched Spieth dump two in the water. And then it was like an hour before we could get back to the media center at Augusta. And when Porter did, he said, "I've seen unspeakable things." So this was just the positive. It was unspeakable in a good way. So it was awesome out there. It was really so much fun today.
It was sort of surreal. I mean, there were people. It was kind of pandemonium. There were people climbing trees. I mean, you probably saw it on TV, but every human being at the tournament had their phone up in the air trying to just, and it wasn't even like when people are recording this stuff, it's not like quality. They're not even like, they're not even like close to Tiger or to anybody that's playing. They just want this like sliver of history and just a glimpse of Tiger, or, you know, some of the other guys as well, but mostly Tiger. And I wrote this in my piece on Sunday night, but I've never, I think, been in a tournament where not only, I mean, obviously the galleries were like 15 and 20 deep, but the inside the ropes crew was like two or three deep. Like it was a struggle to like see from inside the ropes, which was insane. But yeah, it was wild.
Shout out to the PGA of America, because normally like inside the ropes, like they're so mean and nasty. Like, you know, if you dare cross the fairway, if you're, you know, within escape an arm's length of the rope, they'll flip out. Like, USGA is really sort of ad about that. PGA was just like, whatever, man. Like, Belrive is awesome. Like, anybody who wants to come in here is going to be just embraced. And so, I mean, we were like, I was sitting on the 17th tee box, like 2 feet from Adam Scott. And he's like, looking at me like, bro, what are you doing here? So great. It was, I mean, I'm of Porter's point about the phones thing. I'm of the opinion that there exists in the world like more blurry, shitty pictures of Tiger Woods than any athlete has ever lived.
So I'm not going to lie. Going into the week, I was definitely not envious of anyone being there at all. I think the bigger the event, the more fun it is to actually watch on television, just because it's so hard to choose the right group to follow or whatnot. But I just want to know kind of what it was like for you guys to be on the ground. What did you follow? Because, I mean, a lot of people don't really realize when you're there, if you don't pick the right group, you missed out on the day. Like, you've missed out on all the action. If you're hearing roars from other places, and you probably don't get cell phone service out there, so you can't really tweet your way around it. But I'm just please tell me you guys were both with Tiger all day. Just tell me that.
I mean, it's pretty accurate. I peeled off a little bit for Brooks at the end. I didn't see the birdie on 18, so KP will have to sort of tell about that. But I was kind of told to go follow Brooks at one point by ESPN, and I was like, okay, I'm not missing this history, though. This is history, baby.
This might be worth losing my job for.
For the record, I did my job. I wrote a great Brooks column, I think. But I was there for as much of Tiger. You just couldn't leave it, man. It was a magnet. I ran back and saw the wedge that he hit into 15 that almost dunked it. And it was the way he celebrated. Kyle and I were talking about this. Like, you couldn't tell if it was a mixture of like, I'm happy or I'm so still angry about the bogey at 14. Like, you know, thinking like, if I just hadn't bogeyed that, I would, you know, be like, I would be thrilled right now because I'd be within one of the lead. But I don't know what it looked like for you, but Kyle was a little bit closer. What did you think of
in terms of following people, you guys didn't see this, but when Tiger entered the arena this morning, I was actually off camera with my hat backwards and my sunglasses.
Agent Killhouse reporting for duty.
Only Tiger could show up with a backwards hat and like looking like a dad out of the late 1990s, and everyone think it was cool. Like if Zach Johnson shows up looking like that, I'm also screenshotting it. Like, oh, look at this tool. Like, look at this. This is bullshit.
I mean, it was just so perfect. It was like, you know, I was humming Glory Days on the way to the course, just like ready for it all to play out. And he somehow delivered. I mean, to me, like, the fact that that was the lowest round that he's ever shot on a Sunday in a major,
you called
it, is amazing. Yeah, I did call it. I said to Kyle, I said, I think that this is in the middle of the round. I was like, I think this is going to end up being the best round that he's ever shot. I think he shot 65 against Bob May. And I was like, I think this is going to surpass that. And it did.
And that's kind of where I rank this. I'm so hesitant to use the word historic, yet I somehow probably use it on pretty much every podcast. But this actually did feel like that. And like, he played good enough to win. Like, Brooks was just too good. But the guy shot 17 under on his last 70 holes. The fact that one other, like, superhuman guy beat him doesn't really mean that much to me. And we'll get to kind of Koepka here in a second. But, like, that was worthy of a victory. The guy was so unbelievably good with his irons, especially today, that, you know, I don't have no problem kind of putting that in a historical realm. I mean, this is kind of one of the greatest, I still think one of the greatest sports stories ever that the golf world is going nuts about, but I still feel like outside of the golf world, people are not fully realizing what is going on.
My feeling today, and I wrote this kind of about it, is that today was essentially like our version of the 86 Masters, except for this time, Greg Norman like just piped every drive down the middle and stripped every iron into the middle of the green. Like, Koepka just didn't blink. He just didn't wilt. There's a lot of ways, like, he's a lot like Norman, that he's a fitness freak and he's kind of like got that cocky swagger to him, but he kind of rises to the moment instead of wilts in it. And like, my God, like, imagine how many majors Greg Norman would have won if he just kind of was like a badass in the moment instead of sort of had some bad breaks and kind of wilted.
Yeah, I think it's interesting when you sort of juxtapose the Open from, or the UK, what do you call it?
The UK British Open presented by Her Majesty.
Yeah, Queen Victoria's British Open. When you sort of juxtapose that to this, I mean, Tiger held the lead at the Open, and that was a huge deal, but this felt like a better performance, and it was a fuller performance because he did it up until the end. You know, I told whoever I was with at the time, I think KVV was there, like, it was, you could feel it coming down to what happened on to just the 17th hole. Mm-hmm. And when Tiger got on the 17th tee, he knew it. Like, he knew that he had to probably make eagle there to have a shot. And he took forever over the ball, and he took forever on the tee box, and he knew he had to hit a good drive there. And as soon as he hung it out to the right, he knew that was it. He knew that was the championship. But then to see him make birdie on 18 was, man, that was awesome. Like that, and I wrote like 9,000 words about this for CBS, but like, just the fist pump on 18 was unbelievable. I mean, it felt like we were and there were glimpses of this all week. His swing seemed younger. He looked younger. I know I say this all the time. Like,
he kept his hat on.
Well, great. Yeah. But it sounds absurd, but like, he just, the way he was swinging it this week was incredible to watch. And I did not see this performance coming. I thought there was a chance of him missing the cut based on how he played at Firestone.
Through two holes, it looked like he was going to miss the cut.
Yeah, it looked like an ejection was coming, and he just held it together and then almost freaking won it on Sunday.
I mean, yeah, I said this on Twitter. I was like, this is not a golf course that he should contend on. I mean, no. He needs a lot of drivers on it. The rough is very penal, and all the holes bend right to left, and he prefers to fade the ball off the tee. Like, he lost strokes to the field off the tee. He was negative strokes gained off the tee, lost 0.8 strokes, which isn't much, but I mean, to win, you basically need to be positive in everything. Koepka gained 5.8 shots off the tee. So he lost 6.5 shots to Koepka off the tee and basically beat everybody else from everywhere else in. He was like 10th in strokes gained putting. He was first on Sunday in strokes gained approach. I mean, he hit the shit out of the ball once he actually hit it in play. He shot 32 on the front today without hitting a fairway.
I don't know if you could tell this on TV, but Kyle and I were talking about throughout like the last 36 holes. his tempo to me looked better than it has in 20 years.
Yes.
Like it was so buttery. It was the one question I kind of asked him in the week. I was like, I was just like, what did that feel like to just feel like every ball you were going to just completely flush? And he was like, it just felt like I had the right distance on every club. Like I never had to hit a half club or step on it or whatever. And man, like if this tempo could continue, he's absolutely going to win a major again someday, because it just it was like there was a metronome in his head. It was beautiful. Those approaches today, you know, despite the fact that he's missing fairways right and left, every single one of his approaches was like inside of 10 feet in the first nine holes. It was nuts.
Oh, I mean, he was so something that Paul Azinger said to me a couple months ago when we chatted. We just kind of were chatting about his golf game and kind of decline. And he's like, you know what? It's just hard to stiff it. Like, I can't stiff it anymore. I can go out and play a good round, but there's such a difference between hitting it to 5 feet and hitting it to 20 feet. And he's like, I just can't stiff it anymore. Yeah. And I always felt like, I was like, if Tiger really comes back, is he really going to be able to absolutely stuff it? Like, is he going to get the yardage and line right to the degree that these guys have to do it enough to compete? And that is his biggest strength right now. And it's the most important part of the game of golf, probably, is your approach shot into greens. And there's really no one better at it right now. And it's absolutely astonishing. And I want to not spend the first 15 minutes of this talking about the guy that won it, but I think we kind of have to. I think this is very well justified.
He had, over his last 27 holes, I think he had 17 looks at birdie from 21 feet and in.
I mean, if we were joking this week, if Rory hit his drives for him, he would have shot 56 like 3 days in a row. I mean, the places that Rory was playing from and then shooting 72, like Tiger would have hit those. I mean, it was the way that Tiger was hitting his irons was just unbelievable. The fact that he was spraying it all over the driver and still scoring is surreal to me.
Rory might hit it too far.
He might. He honestly might. Like if he's not spinning his wedge, he can't spin his wedges enough just because he flips it too far. But I want to know, was either of you guys there on the third hole when he stuffed it on the par three?
Yes, we were both there. Yes.
I don't know if the PGA Championship, their highlight package, their account or whatever, if they juiced the audio on that. But I watched that tonight with headphones on. I've watched it 15 times. I'm not kidding. I've never heard a roar like that. It sounded like a football game. I mean, is that what it sounded like in person?
Yeah, it was unbelievable. I mean, there were times when, like, I was trying to like yell something to Kyle, and you couldn't hear the yelling like over. It was like Ryder Cup loud in that sense. I mean, if you remember the Ryder Cup, where we would yell things to each other like, "Oh my God," and you could barely hear your own voice, and that was what it felt like during a couple of those big things. The crowd was awesome. I mean, I was, getting in a lot of Twitter fights with St. Louis this week, just because I was kind of, knocked Belrive a little bit. But man, the crowd was unbelievable. The roar that happened when Tiger made the birdie on nine, maybe the loudest roar I've ever heard. And I was coming back to the green. I'd run in to check with an editor, so I didn't really get to see it in person. But I felt the roar. I could feel it vibrating in my chest.
And he didn't end up winning, obviously. I think all of the excitement was completely and totally validated. Yet this time around, there was not one real chance today. As excited as I was, I didn't think he was going to win. Did you guys think he was actually going to win today?
When he hit the shot on 15 and it almost fell, like he almost dunked it to tie it up, I thought he might win. That was the first time where I was like, this, because even like if we go back to the Open, I can't remember if it was in our chat or somebody else. There's so many text threads going on. But, I felt like he was going to fade at the Open, and I don't know if I felt like that today, but I certainly never at the Open felt like, oh my gosh, he's going to win the Open. But today, when he hit the shot on 15, I was like, he might win the PGA. And I had not felt that all week. It was so hard, though, because with Koepka starting three up, I thought Tiger had to shoot 64 better. And then he did. And I was like, wow, this is like, he went out and shot. Like, we cannot overrate the fact that he went out and shot 64 in the final round of him. I don't care if it was Belrive or a
Valhalla or
5,500 yards St. Louis Country Club. He shot 64 in the final round of a major.
I thought he might win until Koepka hit a weapons grade plutonium 4-iron to 6 feet on 16 and rolled that putt in. That was one of I was standing behind the green for that shot, and it was stripped. I mean, it never left the flag.
I think if this is 2000, I mean, if that round he plays happens in 2008, he wins. But there's just the talent levels in golf are just way too deep. I think if he'd have shot 62 today, he would not have won outright.
Yeah.
He would have been in a playoff. Like, that's just goes to show how insanely good Koepka was. But I mean, yeah, the Tiger thing, man, that being on the grounds, that's where I'm envious of you guys. Just seeing how deep those crowds were. And you mentioned it, Porter, I think when he's walking up 18 and that ovation he got and that fist pump for when he made that putt and when he climbed the stairs up there. I was looking for you guys because I thought you might just be like running up to go hug him as he went up to climb the stairs.
But, hey, Tiger, can I get a quick picture?
Tiger, look, I'm wearing my hat backwards. Look, I got the same thing as you. And just looking down and seeing that sea of people. I mean, I don't know, man. There's not a ton about golf that really gets us all super excited. And today was as fun of a round of golf. Even though he didn't win, I'm sitting here with a smile on my face thinking about the day of golf that we just had.
You know what's weird, too? So is Tiger. Like, he hung around to hug Koepka after the round. And like, there was a couple times during the round when he did, like, he would walk through the sort of tunnels of, you know, to the next tee, and he was holding his hands out and like high-fiving little kids. And he was sort of laughing a couple times with, you know, the caddies and stuff. And it was a little bit different. The intensity was still there, as you obviously saw when he was super pissed on 17, but he was also, I think, enjoying it a little bit more. And that was kind of neat to see, of like someone who's so obsessed with doing this, you know, kind of march towards greatness previously in his kind of past life, and now was able to kind of just enjoy it. Like, if this is all a little bit of bonus.
Yeah. My favorite nuanced on the grounds moment of the week was on 11 on Saturday. He had this just filthy stinger off the tee, and he was leaning on his bag before it landed, and it was like 7 feet off the ground, and he had the monster bottle at his feet, which was hilarious. But he just kind of like put his arm, he like put his forearm up on his driver, up on his clubs, and he sort of took it all in. Like, there's nobody behind him, everybody's kind of out in front of him on number 11, and he just was looking around, and you could tell he was thinking like, this is pretty awesome. Mm-hmm. Like, this is pretty awesome. And I remember what this used to be like. And it just, you can tell it invigorated him. And I don't know how it couldn't with how many people there were and the way they were reacting to everything. But that moment for me really stood out in terms of just the way that we perceive Tiger and he perceives everyone else.
And I don't care how obvious this is at this point, or at the fact that I'm gonna mention this at every walk I have so far this year, and I'm going to continue to in the future. This wasn't supposed to happen. We weren't supposed to have any of this. Like, all of us like had moved on, I think, kind of mentally, and kind of looked at him as kind of a sideshow. And I'm guaranteeing in his head, he had to think that this was not gonna happen. At no point over the last 2 years did it really feel like he was really confident that this kind of thing would ever happen again. And you know, I mean, we got just some like bottom common denominator people on Twitter, like lowest common denominator people are like, oh, he didn't win, why are we focusing on him? 95% of people mostly get it, but it's like, man, this is, could, if I had said, you know, if somebody had said that he'd had two top tens in majors this year, would you believe that before the start of the year? Like, if he'd have played in all four majors, I think that would have been like a 50-50 bet.
Yeah.
He just reset the expectations like so quickly. You know, I can remember doing a pod with Bacon at the beginning of the year and being like, you know, all I want to see is him like play in all the tournaments that he wants to play in and not have to like skip some because of injury. And, you know, make some cuts, and that's about it. That's all my expectations were. And then all of a sudden, like, he's in competitive at Valspar, he's competitive at Honda and Bay Hill, and it was like, oh my god. Like, I mean I went from being like the number one Tiger like cautious skeptic to being like, come on, like, let's, you know, let's just slow our roll a little bit this, to being like, oh my god, he's gonna win the Masters. I was shameless.
Is that Elmo?
That might have been Elmo. Ah, Tiger!
The only, listen, you're not going to get any I told you so's from Tiger. The only I told you so, or from me on Tiger, the only I told you so I'll give you is the constant, but what if he won, that I would mostly jokingly throw in over the course of the years, but now it's like a very real thing. I know people are going to kind of point towards the putt on 11 that needed one half of a revolution to fall, and the putt on one that looked like it had to go down. I don't think you can really point at that because, I mean, he made everything he looked at. He made absolutely everything today. And the three putt on 17 on Saturday really, really hurt. But one little nugget I got, I talked to JT a little bit, and he said the coolest moment of the day for him was when he had his birdie putt on 11. He said after he almost killed a person and kicked 20 yards left, he was reading his putt, and they put Tiger's birdie up on the board there on 11, and everyone went nuts. And then he made the putt on top of it. But he, like a competitor in the event is who's trying to beat this guy, like thought that was a really cool moment when they put the birdie up on the board and everyone went nuts. Koepka, I think, even said you could hear the roars when Tiger made a birdie, and then you could hear it like trickle around the golf course when they would post the scores. Like, how insane is that?
That's some, by the way, that's some irresponsible leaderboard management there to put a birdie up right before JT is trying to putt. My gosh.
I think it's intentional.
Yeah. But talking about the Tiger just not knowing if he was going to be able to play. I mean, think about our conversations like 150 days ago. They were, man, is it, like, are we sure about his back?
Yeah.
And that was so deep in our like consciousness. And now we're talking about, okay, well, what club is he going to hit in here? Can he turn over a draw? And to me, that's so much more refreshing that we're talking about the actual on course golf and the type of shots that he's hitting and what, you know, should he be using this putter or that putter than, you know, is his fused spine gonna hold up over the course of a season?
Think about the beginning of the week when someone was arguing that he should be like a vice captain in the Ryder Cup instead of being a player.
That was next on my list. Porter, you got ratioed, man. You're gonna have to a lot of explaining to do here.
Yeah, so I told KBB I literally could not have picked a worse day in 2018 to send out that tweet.
You could not have picked a worse thing to say. I wouldn't worry about the day you chose it.
No, but it
was supposed to be kind of a tip of the cap to Tiger's, not only Tiger's skills as a captain, but Finau's skills as like a birdie machine. So Finau's at the time was like making tons of birdies.
You
and
don't
Tiger
have to
was
defend
like,
me.
I'm sorry. Just own it. It's like my rugby tweet.
Tell people what you said.
You want me to say it out loud?
Yeah, I do. You're going to wear this like a scarlet letter.
Well, so to draw back a little bit, I was talking to KBV in media dining. We were rehearsing Koepka DJ Ryder Cup celebrations, like Bash Brothers celebrations, like literally rehearsing them in media dining to the ire of golf media everywhere. But during that, I said, you know what? I think maybe I'm good with like Finau being a captain's pick and Tiger just being a vice captain. And my point was that if Tiger's a vice captain, he's the actual captain. And I think he's super into that. And it's an awesome thing. And the guys on the team worship him and will do whatever he says. And I just think he provides so much value there. And KVV agreed with me.
What?
At the time. Yeah, he did. Did not throw himself in front of me. Encouraged me even. And it festered in my head. And finally I was like, you know what? This tournament's boring. I'm just going to start firing takes out there on Twitter. And
never a good idea.
I chose a bad time and just a real bad moment to throw it
in
out.
In Twitter's defense, I think we can all agree that Tiger would never pair like Bubba and Webb together and just let that pairing kind of, you know, shit the bed at the Ryder Cup. Like Tiger would figure out a way to get something out of the two of them, and perhaps will someday when, you know, he's captaining at Bethpage or at whatever. But I understand the sentiment behind it, and obviously it doesn't look great in retrospect.
I do own it. I'm gonna leave it up. I'm gonna make fun of myself. I'm fine with that. That's the only way to make this stuff go away, is what I've learned. So
I've printed it. Actually, I want to live ratio to get a little higher, and I'm gonna print it and hang it in the kill house.
So. Will you actually give it to JT to hang in like the team room at the right That would be great.
All right.
All right, KBV, I didn't warn you on this, okay. But I have a question for you that you're going to have to help me out with, and we're going to do this live.
Okay.
I want to hear how your golf game's been lately, what you've got in the bag, and I hear you've been on a little bit of a run, and I need to hear some details on that.
What?
This is a live ad read is what I'm telling you.
Oh, okay. Well, I have been playing pretty well with the Callaway Rogue, Callaway Rogue 3-wood. And Apex Irons, and I've been shooting in the 70s.
What's your golf ball of choice?
Chrome Soft, and putting with an Odyssey 7 now. And so, I mean, honestly, haven't ever played this well in my life on this stretch, and didn't play particularly great at St. Louis Country Club on Tuesday when I got a chance to play there. Amazing track, but normally, like at my home club, I'm flirting with breaking 80 every time. So pretty excited about the way that I'm hitting the ball.
That's good to hear. I'm supposed to tell you as well that as much as I did enjoy my Apex Irons, I'm rocking the X-Forge right now. Mm-hmm. And I honestly do feel a bit like Tiger hitting them. Like the way he looks and feels over the ball, like that's kind of how I feel. Slightly different results, but I feel a little bit transformed by the X-Forge Irons and the Chrome Soft golf ball.
Yeah, there's part of me that wants to try the X-Forge Irons. I don't feel like my game is quite even close to your level, but you know those things are so forgiving. It's almost like might have to just give them a shot.
They really are very forgiving. I thought they would be. I thought they were. You know, they're kind of a launch iron, and that wasn't that appealing to me. But I am actually in love with them. All right, I think it might be time to actually talk about the winner of the 100th PGA Championship at Bellerive.
All right. Who would you like us to go first? What would you like to know
I just
about?
Wanted to mention that it was Brooks Koepka.
Brooks. I heard it was Bruce Koepka. It was on the television box.
McCord did it again today, which was just special. Really, we're not gonna do broadcast stuff because you know what they handled the ridiculous drama this weekend actually pretty solidly. So. I just have a few.
Also, because I'm on the podcast.
Correct. That has something to do with it. And I think it's like maybe the 20th biggest storyline of the week. I got a couple of numbers I'm going to throw at you guys with Koepka as you guys can heat your takes up. We know this now. He's won three of the last six majors he's played in. I actually kind of forgot that he skipped the Masters this year. He has been in the top five in six of the 20 majors he's played in. That's 30% of them. And now see if you can follow this. So he's played in 20. He's missed the cut in two. In two of them, he finished T70 and T67.
Okay.
And then two others, he finished T33 and T39.
Okay.
So that's six of the 20 majors. Mm-hmm. In the other 14, his worst finish is a T21.
Woo!
Yeah.
Big game hunter.
And a lot of people are kind of throwing, like, I'm kind of trying to wrap my head around it, too. The whole, like, he's won one PGA Tour event and now won three majors. Is there any real explanation for that? Like, is it part of me thinks like he just really truly doesn't care, and like at some point he's actually going to even get bored with winning majors? But what could possibly be the explanation for that?
He said today, we were talking a little bit about it, not personally, but in the press conference, and we were getting a lift session and like 15 minutes before his tea time. No, he said. I don't know exactly why it is, but I just feel a lot more focused when I come to a major. Just take everything more seriously. And I thought this. I don't think this was shade at all towards any of the other younger guys. But he was like, I don't mess around when I come to major. I don't like stay with friends. I just stay in a house with my brother and my coach, and I just watch TV and I don't do anything but like try to focus on the task at hand. And it made me kind of think like, you know, we laugh about like all these guys having a fun house, table, and having dinners and all this stuff and goofing around, whatever. And I think Brooks kind of likes just maybe isolating himself for majors and just completely zeroing in and you know, figuring out a way to destroy a golf course.
Yeah, I have no idea why. I went back and looked it up. I think he's won three of 20 majors and one of 80 regular PGA Tour events. And that seems irreconcilable to me.
Here's the theory that I think is probably accurate. Is that like when it's harder, like the variance that of all the people that are able to sort of compete is not quite as large. So if a lot of people can make birdies, then he's not necessarily going to like rise to the top in that sense. So there was something interesting today that I sort of read that like if all tournaments were 90 holes, like Tiger would have won a lot more tournaments because he just have more chances for, I think it was Bamberger writing about Zoysia grass. And he was sort of saying, which is an amazing aside, but he was saying, you know, that the more chances that great ball strikers get to sort of shine, the better the kind of the cream is going to rise. And so yeah. In instances of majors where everything is hard and every shot you have to execute and you can't get away with as much stuff, that he's going to naturally be a little bit better than he normally would be because, you know, if, I don't know, like Jadon Blake or whomever, it's sort of like in the tournament.
Jadon Blake?
I just pulled a name out of, you know, let's just throw, I was, shout out to Jadon, but like, let's throw like a totally random person who you wouldn't ever think of winning a major, you know, hits a shot that goes offline. It might not be punished nearly as much. And that person still might be able to make a par or even a birdie in a regular tour event. But at a major, like if you go offline, you know, you might be completely dead. You might be looking at double bogey. And in those instances, Brooks doesn't hit as many offline. And even when he does, he's so strong that he can sort of hit it up onto the green anyway and turn that into a par. So I think that's my working theory about why he's sort of generally better is because this, not only the stakes are higher, but it's harder. And so he's just going to rise to the top more often.
Why do you guys think that people seemingly have a hard time getting excited about Brooks Koepka?
It's kind of been the question of the weekend, I think, in the media center and among people who think about these things often. I don't know. KBV and I were talking about this. Like when we think about Jordan Spieth and Rory McIlroy, we think of people that whether they win or lose, we care about it. And it's incredibly engaging. And I don't know that I have a great explanation. I think that we have caught a glimpse of those guys' minds and the way that they think about golf and the way they think about even the world. And I think we are intrigued by the way that they, and I'm talking about Spieth and Rory, the way that they think and play and react to things. And I think with Koepka, it's so at times robotic. Even if he doesn't mean for it to be, it just is perceived that way. It comes off that way. And I think when he doesn't give you a glimpse into the way that he thinks or he doesn't provide, I don't think, very many human moments. And I think because of that, sometimes we're not as drawn to him as we might be by other guys.
Yeah. I think it's kind of a cyclic, I don't want to call it a fallacy, but kind of a cyclical thing in that we find ourselves caring about Spieth and Rory, which drums up more interest on it, which kind of gives like all of us people in the media, the feedback on it that makes us want to keep talking about it, which raises the profile even more. And those guys have earned it. I mean, they, you know, 4 and 3 majors, you know, Spieth's 25 years old, Rory's what, 28, 29. So that is justified, but I just kind of wonder too, like why, and I get it. He puts off this vibe and he says a lot of things like he doesn't love golf and he calls people golf nerds. I don't know if that's a direct quote. And just kind of overall acts a bit too cool for golf. But I mean, I feel like the people, Americans, have been starved for a young, like brutish player to come up and really exceed on the big stage and be a great team player in team events. And he's here, and I feel like it's just kind of like, eh. And at the same time, and along the different lines, Patrick Reed like wins the Masters. He's 27, 28 years old, whatever, wins the Masters, an American. And that was like a letdown for a lot of people. I just find it interesting that we have two like really like the two Americans that have won majors this year. I feel like in this country, it's just not nearly as, it's not very well celebrated. I is it justified? I don't know. I guess people can't really control the way they react to things or what they get excited about. But I just find the whole thing kind of interesting, and the theory of Tiger might be the only thing that actually matters.
Well, I think the other part of it is that we are drawn to debating about things, and we're drawn to arguments, and we're drawn to and I don't even mean in like a Skip Bayless kind of way. I mean in an intellectual fun kind of way. And I think that sort of the poster boy for that is Ricky Fowler. Like, Ricky is interesting because you can pick a side and argue about it. And there's something there. And with Koepka, there might be something there to argue about, but it seems like he's just like, there's just like one side of like, oh, he's getting majors and yeah, it's about it. Like it doesn't really feel like a fully formed entity like where you can get on both sides and really argue it out.
He said some interesting things in the press conference that I thought were sort of, you know, I don't think it was him trying to soften his image, but he said that when he missed the Masters this year, he was sitting around on his couch and he said, I wasn't quite depressed, but I was definitely down. And it made me realize that I really do love golf and I love the competition and I wanted so badly to get back out there. And it was the first time I think I'd heard him say, I really do love golf. And so I think some of it, what he was sort of, the way he came across was kind of maybe gimmick. And some of it was kind of like just sort of feeling still slighted of like, you know, I'm the US Open champion and no one seems to sort of respect me. And I think some of that is true. He's right. Like I, as a media member, I need to do a little bit better job of getting to know Brooks and trying to kind of use whatever skills I have as a reporter to draw a little bit more out of him so that people get to know the real him. But it's also a two-way street. I think that he needs to like do a little bit more in terms of like, you know, what Rory, well, part of the reason we're so infatuated with Phil and Rory and Spieth and even Tiger is they do a really good job of explaining golf. Like no one is smarter about telling you about golf than Jordan is. He's just so good at putting you inside his head and explaining, this is why I wanted to hit that shot and this is why this went this way. Whereas Brooks is often a lot like, you know, just hit the shot right there and that, you know, is a good shot. He's not deeply like analytical and intellectual about it. And I don't think that Brooks is in any way dumb. I think that he's actually pretty smart, but I think that he's kind of private and he's a little bit guarded and he doesn't really like love the idea of sort of sitting there and going on and on the way that Rory and Jordan can. And so if you want to be a little bit more embraced by them, Claude Harmon was complaining, his coach was complaining a little bit about no one requested him after he shot a 69 in the first round. He's a defending US Open champion. Well, guess what? From now on at every major, I'm going to request, you know, to talk to Brooks like we do with Jordan and like we do with Phil and like we do with Rory, because I want to hear his thoughts on the golf course. I want to press him a little bit and say, like, if this is something that you want, then I'm willing to play ball with it, because I do think that you are perhaps like one of the really great players in maybe in the history of this game. If he wins 10 majors, how could you say no? But yeah, you know, he has to be willing to kind of play ball in that sense too. And I don't know that he is. We'll see.
Yeah, he hasn't embraced, like, you don't have to let everybody in. I don't think you should let everybody in, but I don't know if he's let anybody in.
Yeah.
And it feels like he hasn't really embraced anybody that is able to sort of convey his story or bridge the gap. And I also think there's something there that's an intangible. Like, there's nothing that I can do to explain why Jordan Spieth is interesting to large masses of people. Like, I mean, there's a million reasons, but there is an intangible reason that is unexplainable. And Spieth has it, and Koepka probably doesn't. And that's just sort of how it is. And I feel like we always have to find answers or try to find answers with all this stuff. And sometimes it's just who the person is, and it will go unexplained forever.
On that note, kind of, how do we, this is an interesting question we talked about on the live show too, is how does that really compare in your guys' minds to DJ? I feel like DJ is a bit more loved. We have a lot more of a history with DJ. It's a tough, kind of a tricky question. The more I think about it, the more I don't know the answer to it. Whose career would you rather have? DJ with like 18 wins in one major, Brooks with 4 wins on the PGA Tour and 3 majors.
Right now, I'd rather have Brooks's. I mean, DJ doesn't seem truly bothered by having failed in some big moments. But I think in some ways, that's a little bit what makes DJ a little bit more loved, is he's like, he's screwed up in a lot of ways. And so a lot of people sort of feel like there's a little bit of like humanness to him. Brooks, I think, is so good and hasn't really had any kind of failure in a big moment that it seems a little bit robotic. And so, you know, we feel like we know DJ. We like saw him completely blow it at Pebble, you know, however many, 10 years ago. Like, saw him blow it at Whistling. We saw him finally overcome some of that at Oakmont. And I don't know, does Brooks really want to, like, have gone all around the world and won, like, you know, the Northern Trust and won in Kapalua? Like, I don't know that he really cares. Like, it doesn't seem to make like a huge difference to him. Maybe he would like it, but does it really make that big of a difference in your bank account or your overall happiness?
I thought about it, and I think like the answer from a media and like historic perspective, I think, is Koepka. But if I'm like on a personal level, like DJ's top five in earnings all time on the tour, has won 18 times. Like, mm-hmm. I think the better career is DJ's. I think that's, we can tend to overrate majors when that it's the most exciting thing to us, and it is what really matters to us. But to those guys, and I know it means a ton to those guys to win majors, and that's what they grind for, but I think that gap is a little bit closer than maybe the fan level of caring is at. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I think people love DJ, though, because he just seems kind of chill. Like, he just seems like he's, cool.
But so does Koepka.
Koepka, I don't think, has like quite that same vibe. Koepka has a vibe of like, yeah, man, like this shit is easy. Like, you know, I mean, like, you know.
But isn't that what we love? Like, isn't that, as a person who consumes sports, like, don't we sort of love that cocky, like, yeah, this is easy. It's like the Matt Damon thing.
Yeah.
The DJ, our DJ tweeted that this week, but there is something different to it when DJ does it. Dustin Johnson, it's much more just like casual and like kind of like I don't care. Whereas with Koepka, it just seems a bit more intense and more like I'm telling you I don't care, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm sure DJ like does workouts because like he's sort of told to do some workouts. Like he's, you know, like, okay, you know, we got to do our workouts today. Whereas Brooks is like, bro, like we got to get a workout in. Like, let's just rip off a bunch of clean and jerks right here, right now in the hallway of this hotel. I don't even care. Like that to me is Koepka's vibe.
I just want the only gloating I'll do on Koepka is I invented that guy 4 years ago, I think. And,
can I get an assist on that?
Oh, of course. It was a tag team thing. I forget what we used to. We were the fantasy team that you and I co-captained together.
Yeah.
In ninth place. Well, our first round draft pick was Brooks Koepka, like in 2015,
we're ahead of our time, dude.
We are ahead of our time, which was absolutely absurd. And then he won like his first event that he played.
I just like to say, someday historically, we're going to look back and see that JT was kept off of a Ryder Cup team for Ryan Moore, and Brooks was kept off of a President's Cup team for Webb Simpson?
No, No. The captain's son, which was Bill Haas, and JB Holmes.
JB, it's still astonishing to me. Like, it used to be my favorite stat was Patrick Reed's never finished top 10 in a major. Now, as of right now, it is Justin Thomas has never played in a Ryder Cup. Inexplicable.
My favorite is that the U.S. Ryder Cup team won 17-11 and didn't have Tiger or JT on that team. So.
Hey, or Finau. Let's not forget Finau.
I don't know if Finau's going to be there this either, though. It's going to get interesting. I know we got the top eight have been finalized, and we kind of did a Ryder Cup podcast recap a couple weeks ago that, you know, prognosticated on the captain's picks. I don't think enough has changed at this point. I think it's Tiger and Phil are obviously locks. From what I've gathered, Kuchar is going to be a lock. And then that fourth spot, I don't think anybody's knocked down the door enough to knock Bryson out of that spot that supposedly Tiger wants for him.
Really?
Bryson hasn't had a great last month. I think that Ben Kern, who's the PGA professional? Kern?
Ben Kern.
Ben Kern.
If Ben Kern made the Ryder Cup team, how would he react?
Oh, shit. That sounds great. I'll be there. Do you think you can get me some pants that fit? That sounds amazing. How about a Ryder Cup bucket hat? I like it. Ben Kern was like low key, like amazing all week. I was secretly doing what I thought was the Ben Kern impression just by looking at Ben Kern. And turns out I saw him give an interview with Amanda today. And I was like, yeah, it's pretty close to accurate.
What would Chris Cheney is asking about? He wants to hear Gary Van Valken players' thoughts on Brooks. But first, what does Gary think about Ben Kern?
Dear God, man, it's a teaching professional. He needs to get a nutrition professional. If I ought to take that young man under my wing and make him run gassers every morning, all the way up the fifth fairway, and then all the way back to the tee, and then he'd hit his shot, and then run down and get it and hit it again.
And what do you think of Brooks? I mean, Brooks looks to be in a pretty good physical condition, Mr. Player.
Oh, thank God another fatty didn't win a championship. After after Jason Duffner, I was a bit concerned at the direction the game was going. But now, a fine fitness specimen is as our PGA champion and our U.S. Open champion. I'm not a member of the United States, but it makes me feel patriotic to see someone that fit holding the trophy.
Oh, I think he's taking on Mr. Player's gluten-free diet that's served him very well.
No gluten at all, of course. Just, animal parts and vegetables.
I just want to say, God, I can't recover from that. Today was probably the most lit the Kill House has ever been during a viewing of an event that we kind of still thought was sold out. We didn't really talk much about Adam Scott. I mean, that was kind of an out-of-nowhere performance. And Tron's tweet of, if you have two putters, you don't have one, that just that ruined my day. That slayed me.
No, your tweet of Adam Scott brought two knives to a gunfight was... I was literally trying to watch Tiger win his 15th major, walking the fairways of Bellerive, thinking about that tweet.
I would just like to point out that I saw Adam Scott on the putting green with the short putter last night, and I was like, this cannot be real. Like, he cannot be debating a putter change the night before trying to win a major. And I brought it up in our chat, and like everyone's like, oh, no, Duvall thinks it's just a drill. Like, he's not really going to, like, switch putters or whatever. And I was like, I don't know, like, seems like he's really like grinding over this. And then he shows up the next morning with two putters, like one for, and I didn't even see, did he use the short putter much? Like, it seemed like he was mostly doing the long putter. So he must have just decided at some point, like, all right, I'm good with whatever this
is. Well, I think the short putter was for long putts and the long putter was for short putts, but I think he just used the long putter for everything.
He didn't have a putter for five footers with the tournament on the line.
Oh God. Man, that's the shot you're going to take after that performance from Adam Scott. I mean, Porter, I thought you were more highbrow than that.
Well, I told KVV.
That was a good one. That was a good comment.
I told KVV, he goes, he came up to me on 18 because I was watching Tiger and he was following Scott and Koepka. And they had shown Scott's missed putt on 17 on the big Jumbotron on 18. And he walked up and goes, yeah, Scotty just missed a short one. And I said, well, maybe he needed three putters and not two.
At what point, how do you decide, like, okay, this putt's a short putt? No, wait, what's the distance? Is it like 25 feet? Is that a long putt or a short putt?
I'm ready for the 2028 Masters when Phil plays with eight drivers and six putters.
It's actually not that hard of a decision to hit third driver or sixth driver.
Phil actually still, I think, toggles between like the pencil grip and like a normal, normal handed grip. Phil's I don't know.
Phil's the only putter, I think, who's been like kind of good at putting who will literally change grips within the middle of a round.
Yeah, I don't understand how that works. I'm getting kind of dive into some questions here. Ken Tessier wants to know when the last time you guys heard roars like today was.
I mean, it's got to be Ryder Cup. That's the only time I think we would really compare it. The Rory Patrick Reed match. But we, you know, both Kyle and I didn't really cover any of Tiger's prime. By the time I think I was covering majors, he was in the midst of, you know, back troubles. And so, you know, I can't really compare it like to 2008 or whatever, but I would definitely say that was the Ryder Cup.
Yeah, I think so. I would even say like some of the Masters that I went to before I was covering golf. What was the Masters that Tiger and Phil played together and they both went out in like 31 or whatever? I think it was like 2009 maybe. That was probably as loud as I've ever heard any golf tournament other than the Ryder Cup. And this one was up there. The shot he hit on 9, that big hook, he hit to like 10 feet. I mean, people were losing their minds. People were running around everywhere, and it was pandemonium, and it was pretty cool.
I mentioned those highlights earlier, and I kind of realized that I didn't hear the crowd noise earlier because every putt he made, we just started screaming at the top of our lungs. Just shrill, loud yells, getting up, dancing. Tron did the Ray Lewis dance at one point, I'm pretty sure. Did you guys, Nick, or Dog Fan 1978 wants to ask about Shipnuck's story. Have you guys read it yet?
I haven't read it yet. I think I know a little bit what it's referencing. You know, I'd read the little excerpt that I think you shared about how Koepka's really kind of still angry at golf.com for not putting Joey D, the trainer, and on the cover of the magazine, because that was sort of the original, you know, discussion that that's what, you know, they were, Alan was going to do a story about Brooks and about DJ, if and they basically agreed to do it because that, you know, it was going to talk about their training regimen and Joey D. And I know from talking to Alan that, like, the intention was always to put the three of them on the cover, and then the photographer shot it in a way that was just really difficult because those two guys are really tall and Joey D isn't, and so they ended up just having to use a shot that was of the two players, and Koepka, I think, is fiercely loyal and was just upset about it. And so when Alan asked him a question in the press conference tonight, Brooks basically iced him and basically, you know, gave a two-word answer and didn't even look him in the eye, whereas he was, you know, pretty, for him, like, engaging with other reporters. So it's too bad. I mean, it's, you know, really the best, I think, long-form golf writer that we have, and maybe one of the best players, are sort of in an openly weird feud, but who knows.
And the part about it that shocked me the most was at Shinnecock. I never heard the story of, I guess Chipnuck was asked not to ask a question in the presser, and then Koepka saw him sitting in there after winning the U.S. Open and pointed at him and said, "You out," and tried to kick him out of the press conference. Like, that is cold-blooded.
It honestly sounded like a kind of a misunderstanding of sorts, and maybe there's more there, but
there has to be more to that, I would think.
Yeah, but I mean, look, I like Brooks fine, but I'm not at all on the side of any player who thinks they can throw people out of a press conference because of some thing. I mean, I think that's bogus, and I would say that to Brooks' face. Like,
what about a president?
Don't go there, Kyle. Don't go there. Don't try to trap me and get me in trouble.
Moving on. I don't know this guy. At Brendan Parath wants to know, how is Kevin handling the T35 from Billy?
I'm not sure if I should tell the story or Porter should tell the story. So, I think I'll give it to Porter.
So at the PGA Championship, you get a card that they very generously give you a free shirt from the merchandise tent. Well, Kevin forgot his the first like 5 days of the event, and so he comes on Saturday, gets his shirt, or he comes on Friday, gets his shirt. He's wearing it on Saturday, and
it's a good shirt.
Yeah, it's a great looking shirt.
Ralph Lauren.
Yeah, yeah. And so we're walking on the 11th hole right after Tiger's just disgusting stinger. And I said, did you know you have a Billy Horschel logo on the back of your shirt? And it just says B-Ho. And he goes, no, I did not. This was my PGA Championship shirt that I picked up at the merchandise tent. And I took a picture of it for him, and he was like, wow, I guess I have to ride for Billy Horschel for the rest of the year.
I think that's the punishment, is for 1 year I have to be like a huge Billy Ho fan.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, so I mean, Billy, if you're out there, we riding, baby.
Porter, I need to ask you too. I think your man Carson Cunningham wanted me to ask if you got roasted by Rory this week.
Yeah, so I'll let KBV tell this.
So this is, when people ask, like, why do we like Rory and why is Brooks, like, you know, a little bit sort of, we're slower to embrace him, in the middle of a major championship in which it's on Friday, so Rory is still, like, potentially in this, he hits a pretty good shot into, I want to say, like, 8 or something, and misses a birdie putt. But, and as he's walking to 9, he spots Porter, and he looks at Porter wearing these sweet dad socks that he's got going on that are about halfway up the calf. And he says to Kyle, you look like you're about to go play Federer, aren't you? And Kyle's like, yep, let's do it. And, you know, that's just Rory. Like, in the middle of a major, he will spot a media person who he's friendly with, and he will give them shit.
So I did confront him in the locker room. Yeah. It was a real Koepka Shipnuck situation, actually. No, it wasn't. I talked to him in the locker room, and I said,
you know, you're coming at me about my dad's socks. Like, I'm, you know, you start having kids and we'll see what kind of socks you're wearing. And he goes, you know, it was a little much. It was a little strong for me. And I said, well, I apologize.
Elliot Smith wants to know, is Porter addicted to cigarettes now?
I felt like I needed one in the middle of that round. I've never had a cigarette, but if I was going to have my first one, it would have been today, or it should have been today.
So we were not really didn't talk about it much on the podcast, but kind of in Twitter and on the live show on our end, we were pretty tough on Bellerive coming into the week. What was your guys' kind of stance on the golf course before the week, how it played for the tournament, and how you left feeling about it?
Here's my final take on this for the week, and I think I finally formed this today in the same way that we lean into the U.S. Open as this preposterous, difficult, just absurd event that we know is going to go badly in some way. I think we all have kind of leaned into that over the last few years, because you can go the other way and just complain about it and whine and whatever. Like, you know, they've lost the course, but I think I think we've all learned to lean into that. I think in the same way, there's an opportunity to lean into PGA championships that are like, you just know that it's going to this easy course that probably is not memorable, but that is going to produce a really good leaderboard, because guess what? Any course right now produces a really good leaderboard at a major because there's so many great players. And I think that there's an opportunity to lean into that. And I think what overwhelmed the course being whatever, mediocre, was how good the galleries were, the fans were. Yeah, I mean, that was my biggest takeaway, was like, and Tiger said it, he's like, I can't wait to come back here. And guess what? They are going to come back here, because it was awesome being out there. And part of that was Tiger. Part of that was him playing well. But there were enormous amounts of people all over the course. And I was kind of taken aback and blown away by that.
Yeah, I mean, I was a little bit critical of the course, and I think the criticism is still justified. Like, there isn't a lot of strategy. Like, you only could play it one way, and this isn't just like me, you know, 8 handicapper saying that. It's over and over throughout the year. The players were essentially, throughout the week, the players were like, you know, I'm not going to say there's no strategy, but you know, there's no strategy, and like, there isn't really any indecision. Like, you're not ever trying to like worry about what club to hit, and those are all like real quotes. And Spieth saying, you know, like, there's just not a lot of like trouble around the greens, which takes away some of my advantages. Like, all of those things are true, but we also, I think, said all throughout the time that it could still produce a great tournament. Like, I think that when you have all holes that are kind of similar, and they all, most of them, you know, bent to the left, it's just kind of like every single guy was just taking driver and just, you know, or taking iron on the shorter ones. And there wasn't really kind of any thought to it. It was just like, all right, it's right in front of you. It's what we're going to go after. Now, Kyle's right. Like, the crowds are just awesome. And so I think what I was sort of hoping is that, like, people in St. Louis could sort of separate the two. Is like, you all turned out and were great, great fans this week. That doesn't mean that the course is, like, a great course. It still produced a great championship. But I also think, and this is true, I was thinking a lot about this and the way that Kyle was thinking about it. I think we need to be a little bit careful in letting some of our kind of snobbery like permeate the way that we look at some of the majors. Like, I think we all know we think about golf and care about golf more than 99% of the people. And they don't really care about a Redan or a Roadhole or, you know, a Biarritz the way that we might, because we are constantly sort of looking for those kind of courses to play and trying to appreciate what they mean historically and stuff. And so as people who are sort of kind of in the media, we need to appreciate that some people just want to watch any kind of golf, and they're not really, I think it would be great if they did educate themselves enough and care enough to understand like what does make a good golf course. But, you know, that shouldn't really be our focus too much, because it can kind of really come off as really snotty in the long run.
I'm with you on that. I do think that probably people listening to this and following us are at least in that kind of 5% that do care about this. Now, there's definitely people listening to this that are sick of us talking about it, whatnot. I think what we've maybe been even most guilty of, and myself maybe most guilty of, is kind of explaining why some of this stuff matters or getting the point across. I don't mean explaining as if like I know and somebody else doesn't, but like for me, it's just not that interesting to watch guys play target golf. Like and just kind of be able to, all those holes that Dogleg left and that Koepka can hit cuts and still land them in the fairway and have it stop. Like, I don't think that's very good test of golf. I just think that it's way, and a lot of things are out of the, you know, the superintendents and the setups control. Like it's, the course is soft. They've gotten a lot of rain, that they knew that they were going to a very humid place in August. And that's the way it was going to play. I think it was, what's important is that guys get tested in different ways and have to play different styles. And I look back, it's so easy to point at Carnoustie as being a great example and the way that played firm, but just the way that third hole played and the way that sixth hole played, where it's like, all right, if on the sixth, if you want to take it near the out of bounds and go through that lane, that's fine. But if you want to bail right, you're going to be in these pot bunkers probably and probably not be making birdie. There was just none of that consideration at all that kind of goes into that design and into the setup. It's like hit it long and straight to here, and now flush an iron right at the flag and land it close to it. Now listen, this provided incredible drama. There's nothing I would have, other than Tiger winning, there's nothing I would have changed about that tournament. Like, that was awesome. It created a theater. I think they're fortunate that it worked out that way. Yep. And it was not a guarantee. And Tiger being involved in it's just going to throw anything else out the window. Nothing else matters. So maybe we do overstate the importance, but I also think it's like part of the game of being tested wasn't really there this week. Yeah. A lot of long hitters rose to the top the same way they do on a lot of PGA Tour setups that are set up like for the bombers and favor just the long hitters that want to be able to stop it where they want to. So that's kind of where it is a negative for me. Now, if we get an exciting tournament like that, like just I tweeted this today. I said the Masters is known for the pageantry. The U.S. Open is known for the brutality, the Open for the history, and the PGA, just give me all of the cocaine, like all of it. Like that's what today felt like. Like, just give me all the drugs. I don't care about anything else.
I heard you guys talking about this on the live show, I think Friday or Saturday, or I think it was Saturday night, and it was like, just set it up to put 60 in play, you know?
Yeah.
Just lean into who you are as a tournament, and if that's just outrageous scores, then so be it, you know. And I don't know, you can probably go too far the other way, but I think that for the people that are like, I've learned to love the U.S. Open. I think we all have, for what it is. But for the people that hate it, it's like, okay, well then go watch the PGA, because it's the exact opposite.
And it's amazing that no one, like, was Koepka's performance this time really that different than what he did at Aaron Hills? Like, he bludgeoned the ball, he hit it, you know, great. And it's like, but one was called the U.S. Open, one was called the PGA. People claimed to say they were annoyed at one, and they were sort of embracing this. And so
that's a good point.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the way that I always sort of explain this, the golf course thing, to people of like, well, different styles and different plays, like, what's the most really stunning performance that's really ever happened in our lifetime? It's Tom Watson almost winning the British Open at 59 years old. He didn't play the same way that Stewart Cink or that, you know, any of the other sort of big like guys in their prime did then. He was able to run the ball along the ground, and he was able to do different kinds of stuff. And that's what makes golf fun, is that you can be stand on the tee with someone and you might be of equal ability, but you might have totally different styles of playing it. And that's what links golf allows. And that's what's neat. And this, there's no way like a 59 year old person could have competed in this championship in any way, shape or form.
That's too insane.
He's 45, okay. I think. He's a little older than Tiger. But
how great would it be if Stewart Cink beat Tiger and ruined the two best of all time?
It would made for an easy story. Dream killer, Stewart Cink.
Will Gray had a really good tweet. He said, "The following can all be true at the same time. PGA offers high drama and crowns major worthy champions. PGA trails other three majors in interest and intrigue. Bellerive produced a stacked leaderboard and drew eye-popping St. Louis crowds. Bellerive is a monotonous and unmemorable layout."
Yeah.
I thought that sums it all up very well.
Nailed it.
A couple more things before I let you guys get out of here. I forget if I said this earlier. I jotted this down. There's been 29 players after World War II that have won three majors, and Brooks Koepka is one of them.
Wow. The only people to ever win the U.S. Open and the PGA in the same year?
It's a joke of a list.
Sarazen, Hogan, Nicklaus, Tiger, Koepka.
Oh. If I set the over-under at 5.5 career majors for Koepka, where do you go?
I think over right now. I mean, I know five, like 6 meters is an enormous amount, but like he's just kind of getting started. Like so my sort of viral tweet of the week was a joke about like 2029. The Koepka just won his 7th PGA to go with 7 US Opens, and he was like doing sit-ups during the trophy ceremony, being like, "I don't know, I don't even care, I don't even like golf that much." But like that
response, the first response.
The first response
said, "This was also Koepka's 15th overall win, and he's now eligible for the Hall of Fame."
So, like, I mean, what's going to stop Brooks from like competing in the U.S. Open and the PGA and being the favorite in both for like the next decade? Like, maybe JT. That's about it. Like,
I'll go.
There's nine guys, just for perspective, 9 guys post World War II that have won at least 6 majors.
I'll go under. I think that we do this thing
right
after majors where we're like, oh, well, this guy's going to win like 8. And
I think I gave Koepka 10 earlier. I think only 4 guys have won 10 that I gave.
Rory still got 6 pending for him to get to the total that I had him at. So.
Yeah. And it's just, it's not. I mean, he's proven over the last, I think he's got now 12 top 15s since 2014 at majors, which seems impossible.
Yeah.
But there's just so many guys and so few majors. Mm-hmm. And so I think that, and the other thing is like, so he's 28. How long does he want to play? And how long does his, I mean, he talked about this in his presser, how long does his body hold up? Yeah. You know, he's had some injuries. He's struggled with that a little bit. So I'll go under your number.
Yeah. And I mean, for baseball players, 28's past your prime. So if he still kind of wants to grind out that AAA career, he's going to have to probably get involved in that scene pretty shortly.
Why don't they do the Dion and play both sports, man?
Yeah.
It's the Phil.
Yeah, the Phil. That's another thing we haven't talked about is that we were quickly reminded this week of the Phil's minor league baseball career when he thought that he was going to make the major leagues, and he had a little pitching session with the Toledo Mudhens, I believe, and he topped out around 67 on the radar gun, and the Tigers decided not to offer him a contract. Phil could have been a first 2 sports star.
Wow. Did not know that. Did you have another Koepka take there? I didn't mean to cut you off there.
Yeah. So my one question in the press conference was essentially like, if you stayed on this pace, you could be one of the great players of all time. How does that feel? And he was like, wow, like I never actually thought about that at all until right now. And that's really cool. And he's like, he said essentially, like, it's a quote in my column, you know, I'm actually really kind of excited to compete with these guys for the next, you know, however long I can do it. Like Tiger's back and JT and DJ and, you know, Rory and Spieth, they're all great. And he's like, I know how to take care of myself better now. And I know kind of what I want. And I think he's actually, there's a chance that he's going to be really driven and be like, you know what, how many of these can I rack up? I'd like to win 6 or 7 of these. So I'm going to stick with my overtake.
We got a question from, I just want to say this Twitter handle at Thick Moranis, predictions for the lowest Big Cat gets in the official world golf ranking for the rest of his career.
For the lowest he gets.
That's a good one. He's 26th now.
I could see him getting up. I would say 4. That's my, thing. He's not ever going to make it in the top 3, especially cause I don't know that he'll play quite enough. I think he's going to go back to the sort of 16 tournament sort of a year type thing, but I'll go 4.
KV or KP?
Yeah.
I was going to say 5th if that matters to anyone.
I was thinking, I don't know. Yeah, I'll go a little higher. I'll say 8th. I think that, I was asked after, I did a radio hit after the event, and I was asked, you know, this definitely means Tiger's going to win another major, right? And I said I was sticking with my prediction that he'll win again on the PGA Tour, but that he won't win another major. Mm-hmm. And I think the same thing about him that I think about Koepka, that we ride, and not to be a buzzkill, but we ride the high all day, and then it's like, well, you know, there's only 4 of these a year, and Tiger's going to be 43 next time one of them is played. And I think that's the thing. Like when we talk about Tiger, we never talk about his age. Yeah. We talk about his back. We talk about his game. We talk about all these different things. It's hard to win a major when you're 43.
Yeah. He's a young 43, though. He hasn't been through that much from a body perspective.
Yeah, yeah. No, you're right. You're right.
A year from now, who's ranked higher, Rory or Tiger, in the world golf rankings?
Oh, my God. How do you not say Tiger right now? Unless you're banking on injury, it's got to be Tiger.
Yeah. He's Rory's game, I think, and he would admit this, is not in great shape at the moment.
It's not, but it's – I know he talks about being really close, but, like, he actually is. Like, he's not hitting it close to the hole right now, but it's not like he's hitting it off the planet. He's still it's so screwed up because he's playing from just where illegal places where he's playing from, essentially, and he can't hit it close to the hole. So his scores aren't high. And I know it's a hard thing to get back to the Azinger thing. It's hard to stuff it. Like, it's the hardest thing to do is stuff it. He looks pretty clueless right now in trying to stuff it, but I'm not like comfortable that he's not going to, you know, do what he does at the Ryder Cup.
He's not hitting it off the planet, but he is hitting it off the scoreboard.
This is, that is a very true thing to have. Did you talk to him about that at all?
Not really.
That didn't come up. I think Ryder Cup could be super rejuvenating for him. A little different kind of pressure. Yeah. And I mean, I think last Ryder Cup was literally one of the greatest Ryder Cup performances of all time, even though they didn't win and he didn't beat Reed in the final. Like, he dragged them as far as he could. And so I think home game for the Euros, and they're going to be rowdy and raucous. And I think he could totally, like, get some juice going into the, you know, the off season with just that kind of performance. I mean, I know you think that the U.S. is going to roll, but strange things happen. Okay, the U.S. is in good shape.
Going to win.
Strange, yes, gonna win. Shit happens overseas for the U.S. We all know that they have not won in what, since 91 in Europe?
93. Yeah.
I think the thing that's encouraging about Rory is that I don't really think he's – I don't think this is a hot take. He's not swinging it very well. I don't think he thinks he's swinging it that well. But he's still scoring. Like, that's why I thought his open performance was kind of unbelievable to me, because I did not watch him one time and think, man, Rory's playing great right now. And then all of a sudden he's T2 at the end, and you're like, I don't understand how that happened. And it was sort of a Spieth-ian performance. And obviously you weren't going to summon that this week in this field with these scoring conditions. But I do think that there's a sort of learning experience to be had when you're wandering a little bit with your swing of, like, hey, I can still score even though I'm not swinging it that well.
Bacon had a tweet today of he said he chose the most interesting name that finished T2 in a major. But the runners-up at the majors this year, Masters, Ricky Fowler, U.S. Open, Tommy Fleetwood, U.K. British Open presented by Her Majesty, Rory McIlroy, PGA Championship, Tiger Woods.
Pretty good. Pretty good.
How would that major season have been? Quickly before we go, I got a couple questions about, was JT pissed at Lowry? He said he was not. They were waiting to get a ruling from a rules official, and the rules official just took forever to get there, I think. So he went ahead and hit out of turn there on 17, but there was no bad blood between the two of them, I don't think. And I want to say sorry to all the folks in the UK that couldn't watch because it wasn't on television. That's kind of ridiculous.
Disgraceful. How are young kids going to not grow the game if I can't see it? This Brooks Koepka is hitting it a bloody mile and he can't even see it in Ireland and England and South Africa.
In case y'all missed it, a couple of Americans dominated it, just in case, and six of the last eight majors have gone to Americans, just throwing that out there. And also a shout out to Julian Suri finishing T19. I want to say I warned y'all about Koepka. I'm warning you guys about Suri as well. He's a sandbagger, but he is an immense talent that once he starts playing on the PGA Tour, you guys are going to see a lot more of. Anything else from your guys' perspective on that we would have maybe missed?
Closing thoughts, KP? Ben Kearns.
This is major season, wrapping it up. It's kind of sad.
Yeah, we got 242 days until the Masters. I think that it's going to be really interesting in the off season to see how much time KVV and Billy Horschel get to spend on the range together. You know, just working on their games and just working some stuff out in the off season.
I mean, you know, I'm ready for some little gumbo with me and Billy. You know, going to really I'm sure we're going to talk literature and I don't know. I mean, shout out to Billy. Like he has some fine clothes and they fit well on a 250-pound man as they do a 180-pound man. So.
No, this week's been a lot of fun. We miss everybody. Obviously, the whole crew being here, but KVV and I have had fun. I tweeted this morning. I love major championship Sundays. I think that you get these guys that are millionaires and famous and just superstars. They get kind of laid bare a little bit, like out in the open. They get a little wild eyed. They get a little uncomfortable, and it's just I think it's so fun to take in and to think about and to write about. And I don't know, like we're super nerdy about it, obviously, but that's just it's a very compelling and human thing to me. And I'm bummed that we have to wait, you know, 8 more months. I mean, we do have the Ryder Cup, but I'm bummed that we have to wait 8 more months until the Masters.
Yeah, I think I'm going to be solo correspondent, friends of the pod over at Caris. So
that's what it sounds like.
Drink all the wine and eat all the wine and cheese and hopefully send out some fire tweets.
God, I want to have you on afterwards speaking French after the U.S. wins 18.5, 9.5.
Oh, I told you the U.S. was in trouble.
Had to throw that little nugget in there for any of the Euros that made it this far in. Gentlemen, thank you for lasting till almost midnight on a Sunday night on the road. Appreciate it. Your inputs as always, and safe travels getting home.
Sounds good, bud.
Thanks, Alec.
Cheers, boys.
Be the right club. Be the right club today.
Yes! Johnny, that's better than most.
How about him?
That is better than most. Better than most!